Welcome to the J3 University Podcast. I'm your host, John Jewett.
And I'm your co-host, Luke Miller.
Our mission is to elevate the physique coaching standard
and deliver the highest level of competitors to the stage.
Let's jump into today's episode. Five off-season tips to be Olympia level. Huge. Welcome, everybody, to the podcast. Halloween week, Olympia week. And I know when I've watched the Olympia years and years ago, the first thing I thought was like, damn, I want to be that big and that jacked. And so we're all pumped if you're at Olympia weekend and you're watching the show or you're at home watching the show and you're ready for off season. How am I going to get this big? Well, that's why Luke and I are here, because we're going to guide you through this process to ultimate swoldom and give you at least five. There's all kinds of tips and takeaways, but we're going to focus on five that are relevant, I think, to some like top level competitors and what they're doing, what we see that's successful from watching their journey, and try to give those takeaway points for you at home to take you through that journey too. How's it going, Luke?
Pretty good, man. I've had a couple Reese's and a couple Kit Kats over the last few days. They're the miniature size ones, so macro friendly, but we're rocking some Halloween, and I really like Olympia week. I think it's a representation of everything that's great about the sport, and just bringing a lot of people together for this massive event that kind of like culminates the year. And then obviously Nationals kind of tallies off the back of that as well. So like this week and then Nationals week, but I'm really interested to see the open class. Obviously we just talked about some developments that happened in the open class. But I think there's a lot to take away when you look at the competitors. And when you get at that level, it's more of an analysis of what are your weak points and how can I use those weak points in fixing them in order to get up to that next level of top five at the Olympia, which I think is a category within and of itself. And today we're just going to walk through that and how we can actually tangibly do that with our clientele and some resources for you guys in order to make sure that you don't leave anything on the table in regards to bringing your best physique the next time you step on stage.
Exactly. And our first tip, you're not going to expect this one. Can you guess what it is? It's learn to pose. And it is like the easy grab for just looking bigger on stage. I can tell you how many times I've seen just poor presentation make someone look so terribly small. I don't know if we talked about it, Luke, like when I did this past open debut, like, you know, Jewett and William Martin, we're next to each other, right? Which, you know, knowing this guy and seeing the lineup, he was like 340 pounds in the offseason. I'm like, gosh, why am I standing next to the largest human possible at my open debut? And we all have areas to work on, not to pick on anyone. But then when I saw the shot side by side, I was like, oh man, like there's areas where William left himself exposed to not presenting how actually huge this guy is. And for myself, knowing that I'm not big, I'm like, I can't lose this opportunity to try to make myself look as big as possible. And so you see some shots of us together. I'm like, oh man, like I'm actually holding my ground, probably being 60 pounds, 70 pounds lighter than this guy. So point being here is that posing is your best opportunity to present a very large physique, or it's an opportunity to make yourself look way smaller than what you actually are too. And we see this with some top level guys. And unfortunately, one guy that we just have news now that won't be in the show is Nick Walker. I think Nick has done a great job at taking weaknesses in his physique and hiding them really well in how he poses, which that is part of the art in bodybuilding. And a lot of this has to be mindful going into your off season phase.
Yeah, I think Nick is the place that you saw that come through was the Arnold Classic that he won, where like that shift in physique relative to the rest of his competitors was largely due to the fact that he could pose that much better now and actually present all the tissue that he had. I think you would have seen an even faster climb for him if the posing would have been a little bit more polished. But it's just now, like, there's so many aspects of his posing that are so polished, to be honest, he was one of the people I was the most excited to see this year, just to see, like, if he was going to get that redemption that he wanted. But it's not just how he hits it, it's how he holds it, how he transitions, It's so professional. He doesn't miss the mark. And once he's in it, he's not fidgeting. He's not moving. He's not losing his breath. It is top to bottom polish, from hitting the right version of the pose to maximize his physique and hide his weaknesses, to how he's holding it relative to the other people. And then honestly, the conditioning work that it takes to do that, like, you guys probably don't see the behind the scenes of what he's doing, but as coaches and people have been doing this for as long as John and I have, like, that's some work to be able to hold it like that and not gas out and still be pretty much statuesque with the way he poses.
Yeah, it is a talented part of it, and just mental toughness too. I'll have to say, like, posing is the most taxing for me from just the connective tissue aspect, because you're having to really create a lot of torque at joints in ways that they're not meant to be exposed to torque over time. What I mean by that is, like, screwing your feet into the ground, and like that rotational force on the knees and hips is pretty brutal than to have to go train and do all your cardio and everything in that capacity. But then also contracting every single muscle and being, like you said, a statue, that's more taxing than training to me or cardio. Like, I really rather do any of those other things than pose. So to be able to present that on stage, you know, it's someone that put in the work and there's a lot of respect behind that. But, you know, going into the off season, things that I would be mindful of is, for one, you know, what would be your limitations and your ability to get in those poses? And for one, make sure you even do them right. And I think that sets a basis for, if you're going to practice something, make sure you do it right. And that's why I do want to, like, give a quick, like, shameless plug to our J3U posing course led by Daniel Coffeen, because this is going to be your easy ticket to learn how to do the poses correctly. So for one, make sure you're doing them correctly. Now, if you are doing these correctly, you find, like, man, I just can't get in the right positions. Like, my back double doesn't look like Nick Walker's, or my side try. Like, I can't get my arm fully back. Or how are they controlling the waist so well on stage? These are things that you want to address into your training. Because if you can't do this in a pose, also might be limiting your ability to get in ranges of motion and have other, like, you know, application for, you know, your training and getting the most stimulus out of those lengthened ranges if you can't access them to begin with. So a lot of bodybuilders, we really suck at, like, external rotation. This is going to affect your lat training. It's going to affect your shoulder and pec training, which also is impactful in your rear double and your front double bicep. Or even for waist control, right? Like, what are you doing around waist control? So, like, for me, it's like getting up in the morning and I have to learn. I know how to do it now, but it's continued practice of training to pull in with the transverse abdominis, the obliques and the rectus abdominis, and do vacuums, and then go back to contraction work. So some takeaways here of, like, what I would be doing in the off season would be, you know, 6 days a week. And this is what I do now. It's uncompromisable, right? 6 days a week, fast in the morning. I do 10 sets of abdominal vacuums, which immediately transition to, between each set rest period, 10 sets of abdominal contractions. So think about hitting an ab and thigh, contracting down, gain your breath, and then let it all out and hit your vacuum as long as you can hold it back to your contracted ab and thigh. If you can do that and keep practicing that, you can have phenomenal waist control on stage. So that's one example around the waist control aspect. But if you can make a small waist on stage, it's like adding muscle onto your delts and your lats and your quad sweep. Like, it can make that so much more pronounced. So it's just an easy grab to making your V taper more accentuated.
I think just to add, just for, like, all season work too, I know you're taking photos for your check-ins, but I think there's value in still working on transition work, because I think with the transitions is where you just kind of let it relax and hang out. And I think if you practice the transitions, and it's not going to be perfect. I mean, your pudgy off season, whatever look is not going to be the same, but practicing waist control within breathing and transitions as well on top of the vacuums is really huge. That's where I'll actually do, within training, between sets of ab work, some actual breathing control, abdominal control, vacuum control, TVA control, whatever it looks like for that client. So that they're doing it in a state which heart rate's elevated, but also you could just do it within your posing as well. I think it's so huge for all season, especially when, like you said, just a low-hanging fruit to make yourself look bigger from a taper perspective, which, if you listen to the last episode, is what these judges are looking for.
Absolutely. Like, they hate people, and their gut hangs out in the transition. So in every moment, you're posing. It's not just let me move from this front double to this side chest. That entire string is a pose. That transition is part of the posing criteria. So a lot of times you're judging at home where we're all watching the Olympia off just picks. You're like, I don't know how this guy's beating this guy. Like, you're not seeing the full display of what's being judged with all the transition work that's happening too. Some guys lose shows based on those in-between moments. So that's a time where you don't want to get exposed, and it can truly separate being a high-level professional from someone that looks like a beginner on stage. So completely agree. Like, still do posing work in rounds in the off season. Even if it's just, you know, twice a week would be completely sufficient. And it's going to keep you in check for also just body fat gain. If you look sloppy, like, I can't do any of these poses, they just look terrible, this might be a red flag that you pushed it, which might get into our other point. But I don't want to make sure that we don't miss something around this application. So we have, you know, 6 days per week we're recommending doing some type of waist training. Twice a week would be a good start of running through all your posing rounds. Being able to hold each pose for 10 seconds, go through a full round. I would say 2 rounds of that in the off season is very reasonable. In prep, I build that up to doing like 4 rounds to make sure it's on stage. But again, here is making sure like we're being sufficient in getting into the poses, being able to hold them. We don't necessarily need all the challenge work. And I think it's a great time to do it as well. For another point is that you have the calorie resources to be able to, for one, recover and also learn. Because if you're carrying a ton of fatigue, like in prep, it makes it much harder to learn these fine motor skills and remember those patterns of movement versus when you're well fed in the off season, you can focus. So just a few extra points of trying to really drive that home for everyone listening. Like, no, yeah, whatever, posing, yeah, I can just wait. Like, no, if you really want to be like Olympia level, this is what it takes to practice this year round. Is there some other point that to make around posing or trying to implement some tool around it that we've seen with these guys?
No, not really. The only one I find is that posing's activity, and people in prep tend to drop it off, and then, you know, they wonder why their activity metrics are harder to hit. That'd be the last piece. But no, outside of that, I think that covers everything from an off season about getting huge. But I do think that does carry us into body composition and how far you let yourself go, because there's certainly a couple competitors on the Olympia stage who are going to be vying for those top spots that conditioning can be an issue. And I think there's two prongs of that. And I think the first one to cover is, where does the off season go from a body fat percentage perspective of where they finish the off season, setting up how lean they're capable of getting when they get to the Olympia stage.
Yeah. So number two, control your rate of weight gain. And this is going to have to get into our point number three, but I'll try to separate these out because there is a definitely cross over here. And the days of the dirty bulk, I think, have just come to a complete end. And I've definitely done this. And Luke, we have a whole podcast just on, I think, the dirty bulk is maybe what we called it. And I've seen even in the literature, even more greater points being made around how much surplus you actually need. You had a great case study presentation at one of the seminars we did on, you kind of broke down the surplus amount that was needed for this client to add, like, he had like went up like 40 pounds of body weight, which kept great composition. Not everyone's going to do that. But again, the surplus was like 150 calories, 125 calories. If you spread it out per day, which, if we look at some of these guys that are still making really good progress, now they keep a really good body composition for one. We're not seeing guys getting way out of shape and driving body weight up, you know, 80 plus pounds in the off season. I think of, now these are genetic freaks, so keep this in mind, but like Samson Dauda, like between the last Olympia and the Arnold, his body weight has substantially gone up, his stage weight, and improved condition. One guy that I'm extremely impressed with is Tonio, which he looks like he could walk on stage any moment of the year, which is wild. So obviously his body fat set point is way lower than most of ours. So he's in a more productive state for sleep and growth than what we would be able to probably hold ourselves to. We need a little bit more body fat to be in that productive body fat range. But nonetheless, like, you don't see him getting 20% body fat and able to put on tissue. Then bringing this back to the science world, Eric Helms, he did a paper, it was 2018 when it went to, I think, preprint, and it's just recently getting published now, looking at feeding three different groups at maintenance, a 5% surplus, or a 15% surplus. And it was an 8-week study with the trained individuals, and the increase in muscle mass across these groups was insignificant. The only one that was significant was bicep growth. And I would encourage those to look up and really tear through the study, because there's a lot of context to be made around these situations. But nonetheless, even feeding some of these individuals at maintenance calories, still muscle growth happened. Now, a lot to be said around this, but point being is that within that study too, is that a greater surplus at some point just led to more body fat gain and not any extra advantage to muscle mass gain. So there's a sweet spot to be made for your rate of gain. And we really want to map that out over the long term of your off season. So I think some people, like, if they're coming out of a prep now, Luke, where might we say, like, for body fat, to what point do you want to get to? Where does that lead you for the rate of gain across this off season to where we can mass up, but also not turn into a marshmallow blob?
Yeah, I think handling the post-show phase is important, but let's assume you handled that fairly well. Once you're in, like, the productive all season time frame, anything from 0.25 to 0.5%, I think, is acceptable. I will say the more experienced athlete is going to be on the lower end of that spectrum. Like, I think of Tyler, in my opinion, Tyler, the classic physique pro, like, his weight trend across the entire off season has been not extremely high. I think it's been like 222 to 230 across a 18-week time period. But that, from a visual standpoint, is drastically improved from a tissue standpoint, and body composition hasn't taken too far of a negative shift. So that's like the low end of the spectrum.
Real quick, Luke, you said, so he was about 8 pounds of body weight gain across what time frame? 18 weeks. Okay. So that, yeah, that's about half a pound per week ish, which I think that aligns well with someone that would be more on the advanced side. And maybe you want to tack on here what's able to be tracked, right? Because small deficits or small weight gain, there can be issues around that too.
Yeah, I think it's across the spectrum of the off-season phase is how I look at it. And when I presented that case study, that's how I presented it as well, is that you're going to have weeks where these jumps are larger than that percent rate of gain. PED introduction weeks, the weeks after the PED introduction, especially if growth hormones come into play, you're going to see large fluctuations up. When you first initially bump up calories, that first week you might see a little bit of a bump rather than the weeks that you let it ride out to get closer back to that 0.5 or 0.25%. But overarching metrics that you're tracking on a week to week from a response perspective is obviously going to be rate of body weight gain, performance, and then response to food, which is for me going to be looking at, are they getting sluggish after meals? How's energy throughout the day? Things along those lines to make sure they're still being productive and that rate of gain is not taking them to a place that's not manageable.
Yeah, I think if you, like, you could gain slower and maybe, hey, I want to stay leaner this off season, but you very well might run into problems for one. And in this study, I bring it up because the ones that were assigned to do a 5% surplus, it ended up they weren't able to stay on a 5% surplus, and some just ate more than that or ate less than that. So the actual adherence to being able to be that strict in that surplus was the problem. And so they actually had to just pull apart the study and look at what was the rate of body weight increase of these individuals relative to what they actually ate. So I think for some people, implementing such a small surplus might shoot you in the foot to where you might not be making gains for several weeks, or something that's actual quite measurable in that sense. Until you get to these real advanced guys that, you know, if we're that meticulous, we could really keep the rate of gain exactly how we want it and limit body fat gain. Where some of our last points are going to be covering this exact issue. But to your someone that's earlier on, like a beginner, you mentioned like a higher rate of weight gain.
It's going to be higher. It has to be. There's more need for tissue accumulation. The experience level is lower. They're not an experienced dieter, so there's going to be mistakes. I think in order to actually add the tissue that's needed, you might have to take it a bit too far with some of those athletes, and then rein it back in with mini cuts, and that's okay. That's a product of where you're at in your journey as a competitor. So they're definitely going to be 0.5% or even slightly higher in some cases. Like, it's definitely a lot higher the earlier beginner you are.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have the idea that, and even when they've talked to me, they're like, oh man, John, you're going to come back and be like 235 on stage. Like, I'm going to add 10 pounds of stage weight in this year. And for one, more weight doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a better bodybuilder. And also, stage weight goes really, really far. If you think about, say you added, 50 grams of tissue onto your biceps would be huge. That's only, 100 grams total. We're talking like, a quarter of a pound. So some of the scale weight, it goes really far in improving a physique when you're getting to someone that's more advanced, where you're just trying to like make a few muscle groups now really pop or come up. We're not necessarily looking for this large systemic growth that might need to happen anymore. So at the advanced level, like 3-4 pounds might do a ton for a physique when you have someone that's already pretty filled out. However, someone earlier on, they just look like, they don't have any of the shape and the roundness, that might mean there's a large amount of tissue required to fill someone out to make up that difference, if able, because you're going to have genetic limiters around that too. But, so just keep in context, like, don't think that if you're going to be massing that making a better physique is your goal, not just weighing more. Because we see lots of guys that are gym big, they got the big off-season shirts on, they look fucking huge. But then you strip them down and get them down to body fat levels to get on stage. You're like, this guy's not a competitor. Like, he's just doesn't have all the components there. It's not aesthetic. So don't lose track of like bring your best physique, making a better bodybuilder, not just a bigger bodybuilder.
Yeah. And I'll make one quick point before we move on to the next one. I have a client who been doing this a long time, but he's been doing it natural for a long time, and he just made the switch over to using compounds right after his show. And his rate of gain, he went from like the low to mid 160s, he's in the mid 190s now, and he's only like 12 weeks post show. What you think about that rate of gain? That's like massive. But you're also getting introduction of PEDs for the first time, which you're getting the first exposure to alterations in renin angiotensin aldosterone system. And then on compound on top of that, fatigue management from the performance jump he's going to see, because you're plugging in replacement therapy immediately post show in order to account for that adapted state. And you're going to have a fatigue metric that's making that weight skew up a bit higher as well as he gets used to performing at that level. It's like, yeah, that's a fast rate of gain, but if you look at his physique from a body composition, he's still got like 25 pounds of room to run. And so it's like sometimes you just accept the scale weight and more have to operate off visuals, making sure that they're improving from an actual physique perspective.
Yeah, good point. So I know for a lot of people are like, well, how do I make sure like I control my rate of gain? And that's, there's a huge adherence component around this, which Luke and I, we please look through our past podcast episodes, because we have large amounts of, you know, episodes on this. And our new nutrition module, it just came out this month. We have a whole lecture that Luke gives just on adherence to sustainability in the off season, which is the biggest thing that we're trying to coach people around, to just stick to a plan so you can do exactly what we're talking about. Now, our point number three, and when you're thinking about rate of gain, this point number three is going to be really, in my opinion, what's going to determine it. Because we can see someone that we can chase a scale number, like, all right, your rate of gain needs to be, for someone that's advanced, whatever, half a pound of body weight per week. However, someone could absolutely not put any muscle on and just get fat. And this is why point number three, in my opinion, is what guides everything. And that is, progressive training is everything. And we see this, for one, if we're looking at, I bring up Derek Lunsford in this, because his area that he needed to improve on was legs, bring up his quads. And I watched one of his videos, and he was doing a front squat. And he's like, I haven't done this movement in whatever, X amount of months. And I think it was like a similar time point to that he had his logbook from his last prep. And so he's like, I'm going to compare to see where we're at. And he blew it out of the water, right? Meaning that, you know, his load, his reps, everything around quad training has moved up to a new level. If that's not happening, there's a high chance that growth is not going to be happening. And so why I say this is going to dictate your rate number two is that this does kind of dictate your experience level. And that's really going to be a limiter on how fast you can gain or how slow you need to gain. Think about the beginner lifter. Every time they walk in the gym, they're probably progressing up in load or reps or some metric. Now, if you're more advanced, you're probably like, man, I might add 2 pounds to the bar, like maybe every week, maybe I get an extra rep every other week or so. So that's where you're approaching that like intermediate status. Then we have guys that are just like super, super advanced. And this is more probably goes with the natural side, because we can always, you know, push that drug lever in the enhanced side and keep a rate of progress moving. But it just gets slower, to where it's like a block by block move up in load or reps to some capacity. So what I would want to see for someone that, if we're moving at a rate of gain, that it correlates alongside a rate of training progression that should be at the same rate for that advancement. So if I have someone, let's look at myself right now. Let's take me for example. It's going to vary by phase too and season. So post show, man, every time I walk in the gym, it's crazy progression, man. I've had the best week of training this past week. It's been so fun. I can't, the logbook, I almost have to throw it out, because the numbers are just irrelevant. The next time I go in the gym, I can add load, I can add reps. It's like I'm a beginner. So, and also my weight of rate gain is reflected in that too, where I'm pushing up now, it's trying to do about a pound per week. And those correlate, they're side by side. Now, as I'm seeing that training progression slow down, my rate of gain will be needing to slow down in accordance, because there's less growth potential being able to happen. And it'll just get slower and slower. So I almost look at this, Luke, like how we taper down body fat loss in a prep. Like you start with a really high fat loss rate, then it comes down as you get closer. Same in the off season. Like you might have a faster rate of gain about, like, you know, of performance gain post show, then as you see that slows down towards the end of your off season, you probably need to be slowing your weight of your body weight gain too in your surplus. Thoughts around that idea?
No, I love it, because I actually view rates of gain into when I'm deciding that mini cuts need to happen for the off season as well, because a lot of times when you get to the heavy point, like breathing's just hard. And you're seeing that reflect in the rate of progress from the gym sessions as well. And so I'm trying to build room for the next off-season push with the mini cut to get a faster rate of progression. This is where I often, during a mini cut, implement program change the last couple weeks in order to fully reset the logbook before going into off-season. Because I'm like, I've ripped the body weight down so that I can have a body weight progression rate of gain. I'm introducing new movements about 3 weeks before the off season so they can go through the skill acquisition to reset logbook and have a full new runway. And basically, I'm trying to reset the rate of gain button every time I do an off season accumulation phase or like into a building phase, right? So that thought process is for someone earlier on who's having to string along more off seasons before they're competing. But yeah, I mean, that's exactly what you're looking at, is just seeing that rate decline relative to where you're at in the phases. And then you can see that in that case study example I just gave you. It's like that post-show phase saw rapid jumps in performance alongside PED jumps in performance alongside food jumps and weight jumps in performance. Like I was telling somebody, like weight moves weight. Like getting under a bar or a pendulum squat at 260 when I used to compete to like 225, 230 now are two different human beings under a bar. So there's also a component of like finding that sweet spot of weight versus being able to breathe and getting people to that productive state.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. That, and also where we're trying to get someone post-show is, for one, post-show, you're trying to be at your leanest state where you have your most productive recovery metrics and ability to train, right? So you're at your leanest body fat where sleep isn't disrupted. You're not food focused. You have good bracing and training performance ability, right? And then we let that go to that point where you almost start to see the backside to where, hey, if you can't eat and you can't sleep and you can't train, that's a poor environment to grow. So if you get too fat and too heavy and your sleep shit, well, you're not going to recover as well. If you're too fat and heavy and you have poor cardio and you can't keep up with your work capacity, you're now seeing training stimulus drop off. Or if you've just been pushing food too excessively, you know, insulin resistance is there and now appetite drops, you can't eat, you're not going to be able to grow sufficient either. So that's the range that you're trying to work within. And I have another client that I would bring up too, that he, we had a hell of a post-show phase and into his off season, just productive. And I think we're on like week 18 of his actual, you know, push-up phase and on cycle, plenty of gear in place. It's been moving along well, but we started seeing like there's several lifts that are starting to get stagnant, more so on push pull days than leg days. And he's like, hey, what's going on, man? Like, I was like, well, how's recovery? It's like, we still accumulate fatigue and run into need for deloads. So it's like training volume is absolutely sufficient. And I look at food and I push the food metric more, and we don't see like all of a sudden there's this big performance jump because I bumped up food. I just see body composition change now. So what does that mean? Well, this guy's just getting more advanced. You're to a development level where the rate of gain and in turn also the rate of performance metrics increase is just going to be slower. So it's like you slow down the body fat rate gain, accept that, or like being enhanced, that might be consideration for our next cycle that, hey, there might need to be an increase in dosage to continue to push a faster rate gain. And these are the type of stuff that we're assessing along the way for clients of when to make those escalations in PDs. So I don't know. I think there was a lot of value given in that one. Maybe we should cut it off there.
Yeah. Yeah. Just cut it off because we're just giving away all the coaching secrets.
All of it. Well, we can go to number four then.
Yeah. I think this is something that I built my whole business upon, was just like outworking everyone. Like it's contest prep. And you think of like a Hadi Chupan and taking, I don't know if I said that last name right, but no off switch in the pursuit of results is like doing that year round and whatever that takes to do that. And the way people typically resonate with this is carrying a prep routine into off season. I've seen it make unbelievable progress. You sent me one of my posts the other day of someone who executed a post-show phase well to do a case study on. And that's literally what he did. I told him, I was like, he came to me right after a post-show phase from another coach. And I was like, what you did last year is not okay this year. It's like, I need you to hold yourself to a new standard and a higher standard if you actually want to do what you do want to do. And he did it, man. It is wild how quick he went up. That's like 44 pounds of gain across a 10-week post-show phase. And it's crazy body composition that he's still at. So that carrying over immediately sets the stage for the entire offseason too. And I just think of Hadi when I think of that man.
Yeah, I watched a video, an interview with Hani and Hadi, and they're like, Hani, what is the secret? And of course, there's not a secret, right? But he's like, yeah, in 2 months, we added like, it was something crazy, like 10 pounds of stage weight on Hadi. But he's like, what was the deal? And he's like, Hadi's the hardest working client I've ever prepped. He's like, the way he trains to when he wakes up, his execution and his meals, his posing, like everything he gives 100% to. And I believe it with how the guy looks. And so that's where I would challenge anyone that is listening, or even if you're coaching clients, to constantly challenge them of where are areas that we can get better every day, and let that push you rather than, you know, where are areas that are okay to slack on. I think this is the conversation when people are like, hey coach, how many cheat meals can I have per week? It's like, yeah, that's looking at how easy can you make this for yourself, which I want to see the opposite. Like, where can I make up more ground to keep improving? Where can I work harder? So, you know, it's coming off to see how the best in the world do it. Someone like that, that now wins the Olympia. What can we do to keep instilling like that hard work effort in routine? It's not just in the gym, you know, you train hard, but it's all the other parts of what made you successful in prep. And I put a few out there, I think in my, I don't know where it was in my story or something, but of, I think consistent sleep and like bedtimes and wake times is really helpful to keep routine. That kind of sets your whole day up. What we already talked about earlier, like what is your morning routine that always happens in prep or should always be happening in off season? Maybe that's a daily walk, your cardio, your waist training, whatever that is. Like those are your uncompromising things that you don't shift on. Meal timing is huge, because I have a lot of clients that run into issues with, oh man, my meals got pushed back today. I had to eat two meals together. Then what does that leave you? Maybe some shitty sleep. Then digestion, everything's affected the next day. So it's just small things that add up in the off season to where like, oh man, those meals got pushed back and end up missing like cardio or something because of it. And so it just becomes like inconsistent is what it all leads to.
I think management of the emotional state is one that I would add to that as well, in that we don't let emotional state change what we're doing on the day to day. And some extreme objectivity within that. Because you see people in prep are just like, this is prep. This is what I do. I don't care if I'm sad, happy, mad. It's just getting done. And then you see in the off season, those emotional states tend to skew people's ability to execute, which is where I believe developing extreme objectivity with the process and just like X's, O's, which is why you hire a coach, so that you could fulfill that role of just executing and letting the emotional state not get in the way of that, is a huge aspect of what makes good athletes get to the top. Is it doesn't matter what's going on around them. They're making it happen.
Yeah. I think that's the point of like, when you have routine built in, even days where motivation drops, because it will, you have discipline that carries you out, because these are things that you just have to do. Then they're no longer feel like they're choices. It's just built in every day. It is monotonous, and that's the reality of bodybuilding to be good at it. Like, it's going to feel a little monotonous. And I know for some people, they think off-season flexibility means loss of monotony and more excitement. I get that, but unfortunately, to be a really good bodybuilder, you're going to have to accept a pretty good level of monotony to take place, have routine built in for when emotions happen, motivation wanes, that discipline carries you out. And that gets to our last point. Point number five is commit to the long term, and probably being consistent in the long term. You can't just do this for a long term, because there's plenty of people that do it for a long term and just be shitty at it. But you need to be doing the right things consistently for a long time. And I think you brought this point up, that Justin Shire was a great example of here, because he sat out after he turned pro for a good chunk of time before making his pro debut, and won his pro debut, and now doing his Olympia debut, which that's pretty rare. I mean, it's a testament to his work ethic and commitment not only in the short term, but in the long term, being able to sit out for over a year, have that delayed gratification, realizing that that's the time component that it takes to get really good and when you're trying to become a massive Olympian. So when stepping into your off season, especially like as you get more advanced now, if you're more advanced, it might take you longer to make some significant stage weight changes. But I guess those are things that you really have to gauge out of what that time component is. But when you look at someone in a post-show phase, sometimes it takes 6 to 8 weeks just to feel normal again. Then you're going to have maybe a 16 to 20 week prep on top of that. So you're looking at, you know, something like 25, 28 weeks out of the year where it's not going towards growth. And that kind of leaves you with maybe 22, 24 weeks of an actual off season. And so the 4 to 5 month off season, you're not going to make significant changes in to really step on stage the next time and be like, wow, that's a different human being. Unless you're like an early on beginner, that could be the case. But I do think you need to dedicate serious time to your off season if you really want to make significant size improvements. And that easily could be doing the full 12 months off of a off season. That is not counting post show and prep times. That is from like a January to January, like you are dedicated off season time, if not longer, for some people. But keeping that big picture in mind of what you really want to do for your physique, have the delayed gratification. So, but the next time, remembering like when I step on stage, I'm going to blow people's mind at what I did. And that's what we see with like Justin Shire and like what he's able to do with progressions he made, like in his back development and in other areas. So, and there's plenty of other guys out there too that have made like significant improvements. But if you need major size up, it's going to be committing to the long term.
The main reason I brought up Justin too is I commend him for not only his patience in creating the vision, but forever being a student as a part of that person progress of the long-term development. If you look at the development of his training style and the accuracy in which he not only tracks his training, but executes his training and how that's contributed to the development of him as an athlete, there's always that I want to get better. How do I do that question being asked? No matter the off season being long or it being contest prep or no matter the phase that he's in. And that's kind of where I come in, Justin, with that process of commitment to the long term, is because commitment to the long term doesn't just mean like being in off season and being a surplus for 2 years, right? Anybody can do that. It's easy to shove food in your face. It's waking up with that consistency of, which kind of brings it back to the consistency, but
consistency.
Yeah, but it's commitment to the long term actually means developing as an athlete across the long term as well. And so that's just something that when I see people do it at a high level, that's what they do.
Yeah, that's even a great point. Hell, that might even be a changing point number five, right? To athlete development, you know? It, kind of what it is, like you're not just a professional from a physical development point of view, but how you conduct yourself professionally in all areas, which bodybuilding is pretty tough because there is a large like introspective aspect that you need. A lot of other athletes have that too. And that's what we see, like athletes that came through that athletic process, like earlier on, can make really good bodybuilders because they have a lot of that ingrained. But we're also open now to a lot of people that just could come into bodybuilding without having that development process happen, to where you can kind of aimlessly go throughout your day without thinking about much. And so the people that I have come that are like robots, they're like, I'll just do what you say and I won't say anything back, and just I'll execute coach, I'll do anything, that are almost militant, those are actually not my best clients, because they don't have that introspective look at, you know, as they go through a training, like what's working well, what's not, like where do I feel muscles that are getting trained? Where do I feel like joints are kind of getting bothered? And then let me relay that to my coach. Or looking at digestion and hunger signaling on a meal-to-meal basis. Or like, man, I slept bad last night. Why did that happen? Like, ask your whys throughout all of your training sessions. And those are good things to note and bring back to your coach, so they don't have to do 21 questions with you. So it's continuing to be learning, your be more self-aware, so you can gather that subjective data, pair it with the objective data, and then come up with your best decision processes along the way. So a lot of us are our own scientists in bodybuilding. And if we look at coaches, that's basically what they are doing too along the way, right? Collecting data, analyzing it, making decisions through that analysis process. So, but
yeah, I think that's the secrets.
Those are our 5 points, guys.
Yeah, secrets to being huge and being an Olympian. So go do it. We'll see you on the Olympia stage.
Easy enough. There's your formula. Enjoy. Now, there's lots of other points to be brought up, but again, yeah. It's always awesome to be able to look at some of the best guys in the world and what are they doing, because they must be doing something right to have takeaways, and they absolutely do. So look forward to this Olympia weekend and what's going to pan out with all the outcomes. It's an exciting one. There's a top five that really almost any one of those guys could win, which it's a rare thing to occur. So enjoy the Olympia weekend, everybody, and we will talk to you next time.